This is on Prime.
I don't understand what the problem is here.
With Carmichael Dave, Katie Christensen, and Nate Goodyear.
New morning, team.
Put the top down. Rev your engine.
Say, what goes on this morning?
Welcome to the Drive.
I don't know if I want to say, wow, I really respect that about you, or if I want to say, gosh, that is so stupid.
Come on, man. Wake the up. The Drive.
His mouth.
Here we go with Dave, Katie, and Nate.
That keg is almost tapped.
Yeah.
And they're going to get every last drop out of it.
Broadcasting live from the Coors Light Studios. Coors Light, with great beer comes great responsibility. Now the Drive continues with Dave, Katie, and Nate.
Got a big hour planned for you on the Drive. Thanks so much for joining us. Beach Boys tickets. Let's not screw around. Let's get the Beach Boys. Good morning, Vietnam Line. That's coming up at the end of the hour. Nancy Lieberman will join us in about 5 minutes. Remember, Monster Energy's Aftershock Music Festival is coming October 22nd and 23rd. Discovery Park featuring Tool, Slayer, Avenged Sevenfold, Korn, Primus, Disturbed, and more.
I have all of those on my playlist right now.
Early bird discount tickets are on sale now. For more info, aftershockconcert.com. I will go there. I am looking forward to seeing Tool. Maynard James Keenan and his friends are amazing live. And I'm also a huge Disturbed fan. Very curious to see how David Draymond does his cover of Sounds of Silence that I love so bad live in front of a raucous crowd.
I bet they light it up.
I agree with you.
I don't think it stays low the whole time.
Oh, you don't?
I don't.
I see. I will disagree with you, but I'm cheating because I've actually gone online and looked at some of them doing it live.
Okay.
They keep it low. Now, unless they change, and in some cases it's well received, in other cases, like, play the guitar. So we'll see. But that's all coming up October 22nd, 23rd. Aftershockconcert.com. So Nancy will join us in just minutes. She's going to be at Muhammad Ali's funeral. They were very close. Coming up, I believe it's Friday or tomorrow, is it not?
Yeah.
And we'll also, I think, sneak in a basketball questioner or a few. You brought something up early in the show off the air that I thought was interesting. 15,000 tickets, I believe, were given away to his funeral.
Yeah, 15,000 tickets were given away to Muhammad Ali's funeral. And then moments later, I mean, people were standing in line for hours to get these tickets. And then
what'd they go for on eBay?
It didn't take very much time for them to start popping up for sale. And, you know, $50 a piece or whatever. And here's the thing.
Ruthless.
Like, I cannot believe that people are trying to profit from this man's death. That is an abomination to me. And it's like, okay, if you're going to do it, if you're going to be that guy, that person that does it, please turn around and give that money to Parkinson's research. Be an admirable person here.
Yeah,
you got free tickets to Muhammad Ali's funeral so that you can go and honor this man's life, and you're trying to profit from it.
I'm
a bold move.
I'm weirdly torn on this, and I shouldn't be. Katie, I should be right in your corner, and I think in my heart I am. It's kind of like why are there so many Warriors jerseys at Kings games? Well, don't sell them your tickets. And in this situation, these people are getting tickets.
This is not an entertainment.
It's a funeral.
Yes.
I understand that. But this is an event that is a difficult ticket to get. It is a historic event. Whether we want to classify it or not, it is an event that why we go to events. It is an experience. It is a memory. And I agree with you on the morality side. I totally do.
Fine. If you want to give someone else that opportunity, do not profit from it. Give them away for free.
I think that there are a part of me wants to blame the people for being ding-dongs. But then on the other hand, it's free enterprise, blah, blah, blah. People will buy these tickets. And then on the other hand, though, I think that the franchises, I think that in this case, this could have been handled and that could have been prevented from the other side as well. Now, if you're doing these tickets, I don't know, figure out a way to make it so if you get a pair of tickets, they're tied to you, in other words. It's why I always,
tattooed on your arm?
No, I don't know.
So you can't pass them off to somebody else?
I don't know if it's something like you have a list compiled in a computer where you have to show your ID and, hey, here's Katie Christensen. Oh,
like,
okay, Katie.
Will call for Muhammad Ali's funeral?
To prevent what you're... I'm saying I think there are ways for smarter people than I that they probably could have come up with a way to prevent
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. There probably is, Dave. But please tell me what person, when they're organizing a funeral, are thinking, well, you know what? We need to make sure that people aren't horrible human beings.
Right. Because, like, there's no way to make this not go from, like, level 3 to level 12 immediately. Because the only way to do this, like, your argument is against capitalism. That's it. Like, you cannot have both.
Right.
There's no world that exists where we can do that.
There's ways to curb it, though.
Well, but I don't think there is in a way that's, like, actually fair to people. Like, you can't, I don't know, like, what are you supposed to, like you said with the aftermarket ticket sales.
Sure.
Like, I bought those tickets. I can do what I want
sure.
with them. And that's, like, basically...
But if you don't want people profiting off of them, for example, autographs, the autograph market, people get upset because 40-year-olds.
I think you either live with capitalism or you don't.
Well, no,
like not to make it like a whole broad.
Let me give you an example,
manifesto
though.
Here.
If you're pissed that 40-year-olds are lining up and elbowing out the 7-year-olds to get the autographs from major leaguers or NBA players or whatever, you personalize every autograph. To Nate,
yes.
Love Carmichael Dave. There's your autograph. Good luck selling that. You can sell it to somebody named Nate. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to help curb the market with a little extra effort. Katie, to your point, yeah, I don't think the family itself is necessarily organizing this. If I had to guess, to your point about they don't have time to do this, it's
right.
the city of Louisville.
No, forget time. They shouldn't have to.
You're right.
They're grieving the loss of a family member.
You're correct, but unfortunately.
Seriously,
it's
this just comes out to people being
people
flat
feed their
out
families.
Horrible human beings.
There's no, a lot this of ways is the, to feed your family.
Here's, I have no problem. If you're going to sell it, fine. You can't go, fine. Please donate the money that you're making off of it. It's $50. Donate it. How much of a difference is that going to make? Donate it to Parkinson's research. Do something admirable with it. And there's still time. Take your money that you got from selling your freaking tickets to a funeral and donate it to his cause.
Joining us right now, somebody that was very close to Muhammad Ali will be out there this weekend, Friday.
Tomorrow, yeah.
At the ceremony. Also happens to be assistant coach of your Sacramento Kings. It is Hall of Famer Nancy Lieberman. Mm-hmm. Nancy, it's Dave, Katie, and Nate. Thank you for joining us this morning. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm hanging in there. Thank you for having me. And let me just start by saying that it was an honor and a privilege to be Muhammad's friend. I'm a better person for it.
Well, no, we appreciate you coming on, Nancy. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons we wanted to have you on was just that you had a very unique relationship that I'm sure you were ridiculously honored to have. Would you mind just kind of, for those not familiar, talking to us about the genesis, the start of your guys' friendship and how it grew?
Well, thank you. But when I was young, I was about 10 years old, you know, back in the 70s, and there were not a lot of things for women and girls. And, you know, I was playing basketball and football and baseball, and I was always in the schoolyard, you know, with kids. And I can remember people telling my mom or, you know, friends, you know, she's stupid, she's dumb, she's never going to make anything of herself. Why is she in the schoolyards with black kids? Ms. Lieberman, what's wrong with your daughter? And I had heard that so often that it really hurt my feelings. But I didn't really have anybody to turn to or to go to. And I'm 10 years old, and I'm in my kitchen one day, and I'm walking by the TV, and there's this guy on TV, and he says, I'm the greatest of all times. I beat Joe Frazier like I beat George Foreman, like I beat Sonny Liston back in 1964. I'm beautiful. I'm the heavyweight champ. I am the greatest of all times. And I was mesmerized, and I couldn't believe this man was saying he was the greatest of all times. And I literally, I ran into the kitchen, and I looked at my mom, and I... There's no clinical reason for this, by the way. I looked at her and I went, I'm going to be the greatest of all time. And she goes, why are you talking like that? And I said, I don't know, but I'm going to be the greatest. I'm going to knock you out in 2 rounds. And she goes, I am your mother. I said, okay, 1 round. And I don't know what I'm going to do to him. And she says, Nancy, him is your brother. And I was like, like I said, I don't know what I'm going to do to him. And I stood by the door and I said to her, I'm going to be the greatest of all time, and put my hands on my hips and said, you better get used to it. I'm going to be the greatest women's basketball player ever. And I ran into my room. And I had something to believe in. So then I'm going to fast forward you through the Olympics and being the youngest Olympian. And every time people would say, you can't, you can't, you can't, I would always see Stefan Muhammad saying, I can, I can, I can. And so I go to Old Dominion. I get a scholarship. You know, I'm a poor kid, no heat, no electricity, no father. But I had one thing. I had my beliefs, and I had this man that I never met. But he fueled my passion. When people said, you can't, I said, I could. Muhammad says, respect everybody, fear nobody. I took that approach to every part of my life. I am not in Sacramento. Katie, I did not, you know, people say I inspire them and they look at me for things in my life. I am nothing without this man's influence on me. You know, you know, people of your generation say I influenced you, you know, for the WNBA or for whatever the milestones that have opened up for all of us. And then I'm asked, Old Dominion wins their national championship in 79, and we're going for our second title, and I'm asked by the Olympic Committee to go to New York to do a fundraiser at the New York Stock Exchange. And I go, yeah, it's December of 79. You know, I'm Nancy Lindman. I'm player of the year. I'm national champion. You know, I'm everything my man said I could be. I walk into the other room, and the other athlete that night was Muhammad Ali, and I couldn't breathe.
Did you share this story with him at some point?
Yes, it took me 25 years, and I finally told him. And my mother goes up to him, and she goes, Mr. Muhammad, my name is Vini, Vini from New York. My daughter, she's the greatest basketball player of all time. He looks at her, and he says, lady, there's only one greatest, and it's me. And he looks at me and he goes, I know your daughter's good, but there's only one great one. And I'm at the other end of the room with Howard Davis. He won the gold medal for boxing with Sugar Ray in 76. And we're Queens kids, so I was on the other side of the room with him. And he looks at Howard Davis, and he goes, Howard, the kid's mother says she's good. And Howard shakes his head like, yeah, she's good. And so Ali calls me over. And I was so sheepish, and I'm telling you, my fingernails were blue. I couldn't breathe. And he says, your mother says you're good. And I'm like, Mr. Muhammad, like, you know, I'm the greatest of all time. And he hugged me, and he goes, there's two of us. Yeah, I float like a butterfly, and I sting like a bee. And he just started hugging me. And so that's the beginning. And then we go back to the plaza with him. He goes, come back to the hotel. And he started talking to me about racism and why the day is good and the night is evil because it's black. And in the movies, the black hat is the bad cowboy, the white hat. I mean, he was teaching me about how African Americans perceive, you know. I said, why do you always call yourself pretty? He goes, am I not? I go, no, you are pretty. You're pretty. Don't hurt me. But he was teaching African Americans to love themselves and to admire them and to be bold about how they view themselves. And he was right. You know, one of his greatest lines, he says, you know, white people are sending a black man to kill yellow people. I mean, what he said back in the 60s bears out that what he said is true today. That war in Vietnam was not our war, and he didn't want to go fight.
Well, Nancy, I've got to ask you about that specifically, because we've been talking about him all week on the show. And you know what? He deserves a ton of credit for what he was able to do as an athlete. But is his legacy more about enacting social change in your mind?
Oh, yeah, he's a cultural icon. He's up there with Martin Luther King. He's up there with some of the greatest activists in the world. He has had more reach than the great Jackie Robinson. Jackie Robinson's story changed America. Muhammad Ali's story changed the world. Who, name the athlete, who could be sent to Iraq to help free an American citizen when they would not talk to anybody. But the government made him an ambassador of peace and sent him, I think it was to talk to Hussein. You might want to check me on that. Maybe Gaddafi or Hussein. And he is there meeting with him after he wrote him a letter, and then they released our American citizen because no other. Okay, so I talked to Billy Crystal the day before yesterday, and Billy, who is speaking tomorrow, he's like, Nance, I mean, can you believe this? Can you believe the two of us, just little rat kids from Queens, New York, and the champ has affected our lives? And he says, you know, tomorrow or Friday, presidents, prime ministers, sultans, there's going to be prime ministers and presidents from third world countries flying in for Muhammad's funeral. He was so iconic. And I mean, I'm sitting there thinking about this. Who could draw this crowd? And, you know, you guys, I heard you say something about, I don't know if somebody called and said something about the funeral. Lonnie's putting this together. The Ali family is putting this together.
Oh, wow.
Muhammad, about 5-6 years ago, Muhammad scripted his funeral. Because Lonnie, there's 9 siblings, and everybody wants to have a say. And Muhammad wanted to take the pressure off of Lonnie. And he wanted to say, these are my desires, this is what I want. You know, when the procession is going to go by his childhood home, go past places that meant something to him before, you know, his final resting place at, I think it's Cedar Hill.
Yes.
The cemetery. But everything, and I'm going to say this also, when I talked to the family the other night, I want to thank from the bottom of my heart, and you know I'm a Yankee fan, tried and true Yankee fan. I want to thank the San Francisco Giants because when they found out that Muhammad died, they reached out to the Ali family and sent their jet. And that's how he got to Louisville last week.
Wow.
Wow.
I don't know if this is public knowledge and maybe I'm saying something, but I want to thank them because, and true to Muhammad's form, when the plane landed in Louisville, Muhammad was the first one off the plane. I mean, I don't know if he scripted it, but, you know, the kids were like, can you believe Dad was the first one off the plane? And then Lonnie and, you know, they've been at the house and they've stayed together, like Layla, Maya, they've all kind of paired up. So everybody had a support system. But look, I was with Muhammad April 11th. You know, we played the Suns that day, and I was trying to bring Rondo and DeMarcus with me because Muhammad wanted to meet Rajan because they're both Louisville kids. Hmm. And unfortunately, those guys didn't make the trip. And I was sitting in my hotel room after shoot around, and Lonnie's like, "Come on over," and I was like, "Oh, okay." So I Ubered over to the house in Scottsdale, and I sat there, and, you know, as I do all the time, I hold his hand, and I tell him I love him, or I'll feed him, or, you know, give him, you know, sherbet, or what. He loved sweets. And then he went to take a nap, like he always did, and I went to the restroom, and I went to a restroom on the other side of the house, and I've never done this before, because I feel so privileged. But I came out of the restroom and I looked to my right and Muhammad's double doors were open and they have a big room. And he was maybe 20 feet, 30 feet from me. And I stopped dead in my tracks and I made a decision to walk into their bedroom. I never said anything to anybody, but I went into their bedroom and I held his hand and he was asleep. And I just said, hey, I love you. And I walked out, and I was walking back to the kitchen, and I thought to myself, I wonder if I'll ever see him again.
Wow.
And, you know, Lonnie drove me back downtown, and, you know, Katie, you know my mom's been sick, and I had to take a leave of absence. She's 86. And when my mom was in the hospital about 3 months ago, she got this humongous bouquet of flowers and a book from the Alis. And, he, you know, it was like, you got to be a champion. You got to get out of here. I mean, everybody in the hospital were coming by to see the flowers that Muhammad and Lonnie Ali sent with a book, a picture book from, you guys remember Howard Bingham, his photographer friend?
Yeah. Yep.
And the stuff they've done, I love this man because he gave me hope. He gave me belief. He taught me to love me when I didn't love me. He taught me to overcome obstacles. And when I was coaching, head coach of the Mavs D-League team, I remember coming out here or to Phoenix, and Lonnie and him are sitting there, and he said, you know, you're going to coach in the NBA. And I was like, I don't know, you know, I mean, maybe, maybe not. He goes, no, you're going to coach. And we're coming to your first game when you coach. And then they were the second people I called when Lonnie said I had gotten the job in July. And Lonnie says, we're coming to your game in Phoenix. And I'm like, he's got Parkinson's. I mean, he didn't come into my game. We played here in November. I keep saying here. We played in Phoenix in November. And she called me that morning, and she said, Nancy, Muhammad's coming to the game with me. And I'm like, really? And he sat in a suite behind our bench. He's waving to me. He's blowing kisses to me. I felt so unprofessional that I turn around on a timeout and I'm blowing kisses to the suite.
And you get a pass for that, Nancy.
Yeah, Nancy.
You know, he took pictures with the guy, you know, with members of our team after the game. I couldn't believe he was there. I couldn't believe it. I'm so fortunate to have spent a lifetime with this man in my corner. He's amazing. That's all I can say.
Nancy, I hate that we are out of time with each other, and I want to impose on you, if we could, next week or sometime soon. We know you'll be at the events, for lack of a better term, ceremony this weekend. We would love to have you back on to let us know how it went, because I could sit here and listen to you talk about this man all day long. It is an amazing story and an amazing experience you had. So thank you for joining us, and hopefully we can talk to you again after the funeral this weekend.
Sure. I'll be here. I'll be back in SAC all next week. So it would be my pleasure, whatever y'all need.
Travel safely, Nancy. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
That is Hall of Famer, Kings coach. And we've done a lot. We've
good.
Done a lot of Ali
good
stuff.
Interview.
Yeah.
I mean, we've done a lot of Ali stuff. That's enthralling.
Yeah.
Not that the other stuff wasn't, but just to hear her recount these unbelievably personal stories of this young girl basketball player from Queens hooking up with Muhammad Ali on this journey.
It makes sense to me now, though, because I've known Nancy for years,
sure.
And she does have this very defined persona.
Sure.
And it makes sense to me now that it kind of comes from her influence of seeing somebody kind of talk about how great they are. You know what I mean? And that builds so much confidence. It's like you say it enough, you believe it, and that propels you into doing your best work.
We will revisit Game 3 of the NBA Finals when we get back. We'll be back for the next segment. Probably not as good as the last one, but damn it, we're going to try our best. It's The Drive, Sports 1140 KHDK. Monster Energy's Aftershock Music Festival is coming October 22nd and 23rd, Discovery Park, featuring Tool, Slayer, Avenged Sevenfold, Korn, Primus, Disturbed, and so much more. Early bird discounts are on sale now. More info, aftershockconcert.com. Dave, Katie, and Nate, The Drive. as we finish up Beach Boys tickets coming up bottom of the hour.
It's still kind of like a wow moment right now. That was a really good hour. I mean,
we just spent an hour with Larry Merchant and Nancy Lieberman, two Hall of Famers, both with relationships with Muhammad Ali. Obviously, Nancy, a completely different type of intimacy.
Right.
You know, they were so close. And this is where we as hosts try to react and pontificate. And I don't know how to because I'm blown away.
Dave, is that before we went into that hour, we said, wow, you know, game three of the NBA Finals, which, by the way, have been a stinker all the way around the whole entire playoffs,
yeah,
except for that one series against OKC and Golden State. We're like, okay, we're trying to react to game three of the finals, and we're about to spend an hour talking about Muhammad Ali. And there was like this question mark of, is that the right thing to do at the time that we're doing it? And after the hour finished, it's like, man, I wish we could still.
I agree.
Yeah.
And I'll raise my hand on that. I said to you coming into the break to pull back the curtain, I said, you know, the way the scheduling worked out, it looks like we're spending our 7:30 to 8:30 is our prime time. So we're spending a full hour, Nate, on Muhammad Ali, which is fine. But you know, with the finals last night, the Cavs finally winning, with the Sharks trying to hang on for dear life, you know, you think as a radio host, ooh, you know,
is that the right
maybe
move?
We should have spread it out. That's one of my favorite hours of radio I've done on the station in 15 mm-hmm. years. And I don't want to overstate it. It's just especially hearing her bring it home as the anchor on that hour and on the anchor leg, I should say. And talk about you're going to hear about the finals all day long,
right,
everywhere. I don't think you're going to hear about someone going into Muhammad Ali's room and sneaking in there and holding his hand and telling him that she loved him just, you know, months before he passed away. So that was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
We were going to, and we even said during the break, like, okay, well, you know, we'll definitely talk about Ali. We'll sneak in a couple Kings questions.
Talk a little finals with her as well, but no. Mm-mm.
There was no chance.
No point.
No interest, no chance. Here's the other thing that I took out of that interview, too. I mean, my goodness. And of course, they wouldn't have known, but if you're Rajon Rondo and DeMarcus Cousins, you didn't make that Phoenix trip.
That's a bad deal.
I mean, that you gotta be kicking yourself in the pants. My goodness. Get an opportunity to go be hitting. I mean, how are they going to know that? I get it, but it's just horrible luck all the way around.
Well, something I was thinking.
There'd have to be an awful lot going on for me to say, I don't think I could go meet Muhammad Ali today. That's all. I don't know what it was. Who knows? Travel schedule's crazy, whatever.
Sure, sure, sure.
I was thinking during the break, too, like if there's some events, you know, throughout my lifespan that I'm like, wow, I wish I could have been there. I wanted really badly to see Michael Jackson in concert. I think he was doing a concert in Chicago, and I was wanting to go, and I ended up not being able to go. And then, of course, never having the opportunity to ever see him live, which I think is probably the best performer of all time.
Yep.
And then thinking about Muhammad Ali's funeral services, and there's the service today, and then there's the service tomorrow, which is kind of the more public service.
Yeah.
And to think, wow, like I would love to be there. I would pay money to be there and not buying people's free tickets that they stood in line for.
Sure.
But Bill Clinton is giving a eulogy.
Mm-hmm.
Billy Crystal, as Nancy alluded to. But, you know, Will Smith is a pallbearer. Lennox Lewis is a pallbearer. Like, this is, and she kind of touched on it. There are people that have so much power in the political realm worldwide that are coming to honor this man's life. That is how important he is to the landscape of humanity.
Let me ask you this. In an alternate universe, if the ceremonies were in Sacramento and the only way you could go was to pay $50 for a ticket, would you do it? Based on what you said before Nancy came in, I'm wondering, though it disgusts you, and I understand that people are profiting off of these free tickets.
Yeah.
If the only way you could go would be to buy one of those free tickets, would you bite the bullet and do it?
I would. I'd buy the ticket, but then I'd judge the person after they handed it to me and be like, you're a horrible individual. You better donate this money to Parkinson's research, you horrible, horrible person.
So here, I've got your way out. So you buy, let's say you buy the ticket for $50. You actually buy the ticket for $100. You buy it for $50, and then you donate $50 to Parkinson's research.
Yes.
So you spend $100.
Yeah.
And you donate the equal amount.
But then I would also take a picture with this person and put it on Twitter and blast them all over the internet.
Like, you know, a quick selfie.
You know what? I'm so appreciative. Can I get a quick selfie with you? Can I get your name and Twitter handle and email address? Like all of these things. I want to send you a nice thank you and give you credit for giving me this opportunity and then absolutely blow this person's world up.
There's a lot of reaction on the text line. I would read it all, but a lot of it's very similar and it would just sound self-congratulatory, even though obviously they're appreciating Nancy. Let's just Nate, you were the Kevin Love of that interview.
I nailed it. What am I supposed to do?
No,
you know what I mean?
Like, I'm with you.
That was kind of one of those things where you basically said go. She did.
Right.
And
Katie got in a couple times. Right. You just let Nancy
go. Had plenty
of
listening to do.
That was a half hour of Nancy sitting in a rocking chair and us sitting at her feet like little children cross-legged and letting her wax poetic on Muhammad Ali. To the texters, by the way, we see your texts. We appreciate it. We'll pass it on to Nancy. They're all basically a different version of the same thing, which was Nancy Lieberman was amazing in that half an hour. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Hey, let's finish up with a little bit of sound from last night. Steve Kerr, Tyronn Lue commenting or being asked about Kevin Love. We got a little bit of sound to get to next as we wrap up in Beach Boys tickets right here on your home of the Kings, Sports 1140 KHTK. If you are the 11th caller, that means you will get a pair of tickets to see the Beach Boys.
11.
Thunder Valley Casino Resort, Saturday, June 18th. That's a pretty darn good show to go to in the middle of summer. Beach
Absolutely.
Boys, purchase your tickets at thundervalleyresort.com. Tyronn Lue was asked yesterday, hey, you won game 3 without Kevin Love. What are you going to do with Kevin Love?
Coach, if Kevin is able to go in game 4, how would you expect to use him?
Do I have to tell you?
That's up to you.
I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah.
If I'm the guy, and I get you're in the moment, you're the journalist.
He's so young. He's like, do I have to tell you?
But if you're the journalist in that room.
He's such a rookie head coach.
Don't you say yes.
Yes,
you do.
Yes, yes. Aaron, you have to tell us what you're going to do. Here's LeBron James with a dunkarooski.
Steph Curry has a pass broken up by LeBron. LeBron hits the deck to scoop it up, finds Irving. Back to LeBron, and LeBron hammers it home.
That was the big jumpity jumperson where he reached. His face was rim high. And it was ridiculous.
I remember when I used to be able to do that.
Nate, you just laughed.
We're gonna roll right past it, but Nate did his thing. Here's Steph Curry making it happen last night.
Barajow at the left point, watched by Thompson. Dribble hand up to Curry, fires a drifting three. It's an air ball.
All right, so that was Steph.
You're horrible. So
the Cavs guys were quick edits last night, man.
The what?
The Cavs guys on the audio, quick cuts on those edits.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Very quick cut. Steve Kerr was asked what happened.
We can always make a quick substitution. So that I don't think that had anything to do with losing the game. It wasn't lineups. It wasn't, substitution patterns. It was we just got our tail kicked.
Mm. Well, what do you think, Draymond Green?
Like I said, there's no X and O. Mm-hmm. You know, whether they were a little more active or not, we were terrible. So. You got to give them credit for the effort they came out and played with.
So there you go.
Effort that they came out and played with? Or, I
don't
know.
Did you not see elevated effort out of the Cavs?
No, absolutely.
Did you not, Katie?
Especially LeBron
on that.
I was trying, like, I don't know, my first reaction to that was like it was almost an underhanded dig.
All right, quick question for both of you. You must choose one or the other. Did the Cavaliers win last night more because of their effort and the way they played, or did they win last night more because the Warriors did not have the same effort and didn't play well?
Cavs effort.
See, I'm taking the second one, and it's because the Warriors have yet to win a Game 3 in the playoffs this season.
That is 100% correct.
And last year, let me see if I can find this, I believe they lost 2 out of 4 last year, too. And without having the numbers right in front of me, teams that win series 4-1 and beat the tar out of everyone, Game 3s get lost.
Sure.
Right? And,
sure.
And this was a night where, like, the Warriors can survive bad shooting nights, but what they can't survive is those nights where everything goes wrong. Mm-hmm. They've had, what, a dozen of those this year now?
Do you need the Cavs to do something similar in Game 4 for you to officially proclaim that this is a series now?
No, a win would do it.
A win would do it.
I mean, because I do this every year, Dave, because you are always the person that, you know, we'd spent the first two games like, yeah, the Warriors have cleaned house. The series is over. But sure. You always have that little voice that's like, well, have the Warriors just done what they're supposed to do, which is win two games at home. And every year I go through this, the second I tune in and it's 33-14 Cavs, I'm going, duh, they're at home.
Sure.
Duh. Come on. And if they get one more, it doesn't matter if it's by 1 point in triple overtime.
It's a win.
That's exactly it. You're 2-2. You got a series.
Remember, Katie, going into yesterday, we talked about it. They were 7-0, now 8-0 with a plus 19.5 margin of victory. That went up a little bit.
At home.
At
right,
home.
Yeah.
So now 8-0, I'm imagining that somewhere around 22-23. And a plus-minus margin for point differentials. They're a good team. This may just come down to, and I hope it doesn't, but
home court advantage.
This goes 7 games. Every game, whoever the home team is a blowout. Although I doubt it. Bottom line is this: it's no fluke. The baskets are still the same size.
No, it's I think that's kind of a common misconception, though. There's all kinds of things that factor into why you play better at home. Your surroundings and how comfortable you are in a setting. And yeah, the baskets are all the same.
Yeah, but it's not a misconception. Literally, the baskets are the same size.
Yeah, but the misconception is about like, oh,
that's
I don't understand why it's so different home versus away in terms of production and how much better teams shoot at home. It's your familiarity with your surroundings. And when you look at a basket in an arena of that size, it's completely different. The background, the depth perception, all of it is different. That's why I've never really understood why NBA teams practice on a practice court instead of on their actual floor.
I've always thought it was weird to do things in practice that you don't do in games, too. But, I mean, that's, you know, whatever. I think a lot of it just has to do with the fact that the Warriors, you get up 2-0 on teams. You got that desperation of going on the road. Golden State's lost 6 games in this year's playoffs. 3 of them have been by 24 points or more. Yeah. And you know, so yeah. Does that mean the Warriors are bad? No, it means that when things go to crap for them, like they really go to crap.
Yeah, but they because live and die by their 3-point shot.
Hold on. No. You say that. Do you think that there were only 9 games in the regular season this year where their shooting betrayed them? Only 9 games?
So there was plenty of games where they were down and they came back and won. The difference is that it's kind of like the Suns of the D'Antoni days. Whenever you rely on your 3-point shot that way, when you get down 20, you're not out of a game. And when you're up 20, you haven't sealed the game. The difference is that Golden State throughout the season has been able to rely on it with more consistency than we've ever seen in the NBA history.
Before we leave, because there's no other place to fit this in, and Jay, help me with the levels on this here real quick. Here's Bobby Brown talking about having relations with a ghost.
I can't even believe I'm going to ask you this, but I have to.
What?
You had sex with a ghost?
A ghost, yeah.
Come on, man. Tell me about it.
Yeah.
I moved into this house. I bought this mansion in Georgia. So this was a really, really spooky place. But yes, one time I woke up and, yeah, a ghost.
Right on top of me.
No, Bobby.
Being mounted by a ghost.
Mounted.
No, you weren't.
I wasn't high.
Yes,
that was my next question.
I wasn't high.
That was my next question.
Wasn't
were you tripping?
High at
were you tripping?
All. No, I was not tripping.
I watched that yesterday.
I've had some crazy situations.
I watched that yesterday, and it was comical.
What, Bobby having sex?
Let's be honest.
The
dude
Robin
popped
Roberts
a couple tabs,
interview.
Watched Ghostbusters, and couldn't differentiate.
Yep.
Hey, it's his prerogative. All right, for Jay Johnson, for Nate Goodyear, for Katie Christensen. Yeah, thank you. Oh, hey, a studio audience. Very happy with today's show.
We did a really good job today.
Appreciate you guys.
Yeah. You did a great job.
We'll be giving away tickets to tomorrow's show, of course. Please do not resell them on the secondary market. Speaking of sex with a ghost, Damian Barling, Jason Ross, Ken Rudolph. I had no.
That didn't go the way you thought it would.
No segue into promoting their show. They will be doing the lowdown at noon. That's it. Thanks, everybody. Jim Rome is next. It is Sports 1140 KHTK.